name may be smooth, but it doesn't rhyme with Carlos Santana. This is Sanjana Needs a Friend.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Sanjana. Don't you like that song? Smooth?
I do. It was my ringtone in university for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah, I also really like Rob Thomas.
Oh, man.
I feel like I should have been born 10 years earlier than I was.
I mean, did you grow up on Matchbox 20 at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're good. 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah. As is smooth. So, yes. You know.
Well, your nose. Tell me what happened to your nose today.
My nose.
People can't see it, but you have a nose.
I do have a nose. It even has a ring in it, which I also have a funny nose story about a little boy that I babysat. But I'll tell that one later. First today, my nose. Okay, so the COVID numbers in Nova Scotia are going up a little bit. Nothing compared to most other provinces, but out of an abundance of caution, my roommate and I decided that we were going to go get a test today because they've also kind of recently started doing asymptomatic testing. So we were like, sure, why not? I've had one test done before, so I kind of knew what to expect. But they've enlisted like some of the fire service guys to help out at the testing center. So I had this lovely fireman named Tom who did my swab or whatever. And he was a real keener, like wanted to make sure that I understood exactly what was happening. Everything was explained super well. So my swab took so long. And he clearly wanted to do a really good job. So you know how the swab is like really long and then it breaks off at one point? Have you had this done? Sure.
I have not, but I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they have to like shove the swab in about as far as they can up your nose and then like move it around there for 7 to 9 seconds. So he shoved the swab in and then kept shoving it in. And he seriously got all the way up to like the spot where it breaks off. Like that's how far up my nose he shoved the stinking swab. And it took him probably 10 seconds to get it all the way up there. And then he counted to 7 after that and then pulled it out relatively slowly because it would hurt if he ripped that thing out of my nose fast. So my nose still kind of tingles a little bit because it was – I mean, I could feel it in my throat when I was driving home. Like, that's how far into my sinus cavities he'd gone. Yeah. I was a bit snarky. Not, like, rude snarky. Just, you know, we're cheeky out here on the East Coast. So I was like, geez, did you get a bit of brain on the end of that? He was like, yeah, you want it back? I was like, yeah, I think I'll probably need it later. So that was
Tom the Thorough Fireman.
Tom the Thorough Fireman. He got my age wrong, which is too bad because he's like exactly 20 years older than me. So that math should have been really easy for him to do, but he got it
wrong. Well, at least he's thorough with the swab.
Yeah. At least that.
Well, here's hoping you do not have COVID.
Amen.
Yes.
Yeah.
But a good word for everyone out there. Don't be afraid to go get a test if you need one.
That's right.
Care for your neighbor.
Yeah. And if you've got like drive-in testing or rapid test centers or your province is doing asymptomatic testing and you are someone who's hanging out in the public from time to time, just go get one done anyway. It's never a bad idea. And it usually doesn't hurt that badly.
You know what else is never a bad idea?
What's that?
Talking about today's show. So.
Okay.
What a segue.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people just want to not think about swabs in their noses for a little bit. That's probably why.
I mean, it feels like chlorine water going up your nose. It's not terrible. Anyway. Yes.
Yes. We have a great show today.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. And a great part two coming up on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, the first half is really great. And then as I've been listening to the second half, oh, it is great. I love. Yeah. Actually, I'm not going to say anything else. It's just, you got to listen. It's really good.
It's so good. So listen to today so that you understand the next part. And also because this part's good, but like, whoa, you think it can't get better and then it gets better.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're talking about is we're talking with staff who come from non-evangelical backgrounds.
Yeah.
And what their experience coming onto staff has been. And yeah, reconciling some of their past and their home context with the reality of serving in a ministry like university.
Yeah, and they have so many interesting insights from non-religious perspectives, from like other religions, from like just different Christian backgrounds and traditions. It was really exciting to hear.
Yeah. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's go make some friends.
Yeah, my name is Archie Balakumaran. I am in Toronto and I work as a campus minister at OCAD University, and I also work at the National Resource Center as an artist in residence. And I am delighted to be Sanjana's friend.
Oh, you stole my word. What do I do? I'm also delighted. My name is Ashley Chan, and I live in Toronto. I'm the director of high school ministry with InterVarsity Fellowship, and I feel also delighted to be Sanjana's friend.
Hello, my name is Vera Ivakina, and I'm currently living in Poland, working with HSA, which is kind of like the InterVarsity in Poland, IFES sister movement. And I'm working with international students here. And I am so, so happy to be Sanjana's friend.
That's great.
I'm so proud right now that people want to be friends with Sanjana. You've come a long way, Sanjana, since that internship.
Credit goes to Dave a little bit.
2021, the year that Sanjana gets friends.
Right, finally. The year of Sanj.
I've only been waiting 27 years. Fine.
Is this why you're doing this podcast?
Yeah. I really do need friends, Ashley. It's not just a title. I really, for a second, I thought we were gonna get a trifecta of delighted. I'm gonna get like an also, and then an also delighted.
Oh, that would have been good.
But this is also very good. Also, I didn't realize that you were working with the IFES movement in Poland while you're there, but that's great. Where in Poland are you?
I am in a small town called Świnica, but it's close to a bigger town called Wrocław. But okay. Wrocław is not Warsaw.
Yes.
Often confused, but yeah. Okay. So it's one of the bigger student cities in Poland.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And it's not near Krakow either.
I think like maybe 3-4 hours from Krakow.
Okay, so you all come from non-evangelical backgrounds. So this episode is kind of about like people who are coming from non-Christian, but also just like non-evangelical backgrounds. What were some of the like beliefs or rituals or traditions that you grew up with? So like maybe it's stuff that was part of your heritage, maybe it's stuff that your parents really enforce, but like maybe those things were different from each other. What was kind of that atmosphere like for you growing up?
So I grew up in a mixed religion household. My father was Hindu and my mother was Christian, but both of them still held on to various like Hindu like sociocultural practices. So even though my mother was Christian, like there are still things that she'll do in how she displays her faith that are still very Hindu in nature. But yeah, growing up, like my dad kind of had this like, we didn't have a mantle, but he had this like shelf that he put up that like held all the statues of like four key gods that he kind of like focused his prayers towards. I think though my mother's family was Christian, the understanding I think was that when she got married, she would be Hindu with my father. And so I think that was a point of contention. And then I think my father especially got really upset when she tried to teach me about Christianity. So his vantage was either I learn about everything to do with Hinduism, which is a lot, or I learn nothing about religion. And so that was the easier option. So I kind of grew up in that, like many things happening, but I didn't really like encounter Christianity in a significant way until I was a teenager. I also had some very strange and confusing experiences in temples with my dad's side of the family. Like my dad was pretty nominal in his faith, but his family was like very Hindu. So anytime I saw any of our extended family, like there would be the like family trip to the temple and like all the like religious holiday type meals. But there was very little explanation for me as to why we were doing things or what was happening.
Right. Did you ever feel comfortable like going through the rituals, or was it always just like, I don't understand what we're doing, so I don't like doing it?
Yeah, it was that. And then I think a lot of it was also like not in English. So yeah, that was like an additional barrier to understanding what was happening.
Yeah. And was it in like really formal Tamil?
Or
was
it pretty
colloquial? Yeah.
I wouldn't know the difference,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I feel like the family kind of rituals were maybe a bit more colloquial, but I think there was like definitely like a sense of like esteem and like being sacred if we ever were in the temple.
Yeah, my mom is Orthodox. So whenever we go to mass in India, like I don't know what's happening because the type of Malayalam that's used in the service is like so formal and so archaic. Like nobody uses it to speak anymore in their families. Like it's only used at mass. It would be like if you went to a Latin mass kind of thing. So yeah, I can kind of identify with that. Like you're there and like it's kind of okay because your family is with you and there are other parts of it that you get, but then there's like all of these other parts that are super formal and you just don't understand. What were some of the things you mentioned that your mom, in the way that she practiced Christianity, like retained a lot of Hindu forms? What were some of those things?
Like, I think one of the factors of Hinduism is like this like belief in various superstitions. And so I think that was something that my mother carried into her Christian faith. And so there would be certain things that she would then like ascribe to her faith that weren't actually related to Jesus or following Christianity in any way, but it would be more so like a sociocultural understanding that had gotten like mixed in with her.
Yeah, interesting. Who were the little gods on your dad's shelf?
Well, I think like it was interesting because he actually did have like one of Jesus, but but he didn't like he kind of had it for show. Like I think actually, like ironically, like we got it at like the Indian equivalent of Honest Ed's. Like, so we got these like, you know, just like crushed tin kind of like statue, like, so they weren't like lit, like, you know, super fancy, they're like plated tin. But I think there was a Ganesh and Lakshmi. Yeah. And then also, like, until the day that my, like, father passed, like, he had this picture of this guru, like, on the wall. Like, I don't think he ever, yeah, like, really acknowledged it, but I remember that was one of the first things I took down, like, afterwards. So.
Interesting. What is the Indian equivalent of Honest Ed's? Is it the Kohinoor Kitchen Place?
I don't know if that place existed. Like, I do remember that we went there, but like, it was like one of those places that was like a Indian grocery store, but then also had like various like statues and religious, yeah, artifacts and garlands and things, yeah, that you'd use for puja and stuff like that. So
there are a few of those on there. So fair enough. Indian Honest Ed's. I love that. No one outside Toronto is going to understand that reference, but everyone on this screen might understand that reference. Wow, crazy. Okay. And Ashley, you grew up in a non-Christian home. Was your home also like blanket not religious or just not?
No, we, so it's mixed. Like, I grew up in an intergenerational home, Chinese background. So my family immigrated from Hong Kong, but there's roots in China, obviously. So my grandma was actually Buddhist. So there was a bit of Buddhist influence in our family, but my parents did not have a specific faith background. I think they held on to the belief system of the North American dream more so around security, stability, comfort. They moved here to start a life for their kids kind of thing. Yeah. So I was born in Canada, but I have a lot of influence from my parents and my grandparents growing up. Yeah, so I think, I don't know much about like Buddhism in general, but my experience is that whenever there was a crisis that my grandma experienced, for example, if my dad lost his job, the first thing she would do is go to the temple to pray. And that's kind of the understanding of, oh, when there is crisis, you go to pray in the temple. And then the other memory I have is of funerals, actually, to like going to temples when somebody has passed in the family or a close friend, and, you know, paying your respects there. But also, like, there's this ritual of burning paper. So anything from like paper money to paper Mercedes Benz. I even saw one of those one time, and there are stores in like Pacific Mall that sell those things. And I'm like, this is really strange, but I've just been doing it for so many years that I didn't want to question. And particularly during funerals, where it's such a somber occasion, you don't really want to like ask, why are we burning this thing? What is it for? And I didn't really like believe that there was an afterlife, or, you know, that you're reincarnated and stuff like that too. So I just thought it was something you just had to do to pay respects. But I think one time I noticed, like, I was given a wad of cash, like paper cash. And I'm like, this is so much money. And I looked at the note, and it said bank note of hell. And at that point, I'm like, I don't know. So is this going to hell? Like, where is this money going? Because the symbolism of that is when the person passes, they go into the afterlife, and all the stuff that is burned goes with them. And so they'll have money to spend. They'll have cars to drive, things like that too. So just, I started to ask more questions when I got a little bit older. And even just recently, like a couple of years ago, my grandfather passed away, and they had all these same rituals. But as I am a believer in Jesus now, and I think in my time of learning, I realized, oh yeah, I can actually choose out of this if I don't believe in what these rituals or these symbols represent. That I don't have to do it. And I had a conversation with my parents that was pretty difficult, in being like, I'm an adult now, like, I want to make my own decisions, because this is doesn't really fall in line with my Christian faith. But they respected it. They respected me and they said, that's fine. You don't have to do it. So I think part of them, even in their growing up and understanding of like the Buddhist culture, they didn't believe everything as well. So they're much more open-minded to let their kids decide whether or not to participate in these things. So yeah, we did it in a very respectful way of declining participation, but so it was good.
Yeah, were there things that you chose to participate in?
So besides the like burning ritual, there weren't many other like super Buddhist like rituals that we had to do. So it felt like a very westernized funeral. I don't know. I've never been to a funeral in Asia before. So this is kind of my only like frame of reference.
Right.
So I presented the eulogy as well. Like I said it in English and then my cousin translated into Chinese, kind of recounting his life. And then we did a processional, which I think most people do too, out to the gravesite. Mm-hmm. And I think I was praying a lot in my head though throughout the whole time, because I know that as you're doing certain rituals, there might be like other spirits and stuff present or whatever. So I think for my grandfather who passed and for my family, I was just praying that Jesus's peace would be upon everybody. Although like I didn't understand everything that was going on, and just prayed for Jesus to be present in the midst of all of it. So I don't have a huge frame of reference as to what other things look like.
I definitely relate though to the like praying to Jesus in the midst. Like I think there have been a couple times at the behest of like my family where I've had to do things, like my extended family, where I've found myself in a temple and I'm like, I don't know what this is, so I'm just gonna pray to Jesus as I go to all these stations and and pray over that. So yeah, definitely understanding the like now being a Christian and trying to relate to some of those things and like in those spaces, like being aware of like not choosing something that's gonna completely like come into a place where you're worshiping something else, but also in those spaces just like praying to Jesus in the midst of that.
Actually Kim and I had that experience in our tea ceremony when we got married, because you're supposed to worship the ancestors in that ceremony. And so there were like pictures of her Banwai and Onwai, Banoi and Anoi up on the wall. Oh, sorry, her Banoi was still alive. She was there. But basically we were supposed to like pray to them and offer worship. And we knew we couldn't do that. So what we had was their pictures there on a mantle, but then Jesus and Mary holding Jesus like were there. And so we honored the parents or grandparents by bowing to them. And then we prayed to Jesus and worshiped him. And so, and we did this whole like contextualizing that for the family, because they were kind of like, well, we don't normally do that, but that actually probably makes sense. And there's a Catholic priest there who was like, thumbs up. Yeah, that's good. But you want to try to honor and not like break relationship, but also be true to what you actually believe about who Jesus is.
I also had a similar experience. My sister, who I think she would identify as a Wiccan or kind of New Age realm stuff, decided to get baptized by an Anglican priest. And I was very confused because I was like, okay, this is kind of out of nowhere. And at first I was like, wow, this is really cool. But then the more I talked to her and asked her, so like, why are you getting baptized? And she kind of said, I want to be one with God and one with nature and like connected to the spiritual realm. And I'm like, oh, that's really, really cool. And like, what do you think about Jesus in terms of this baptism? And she's like, oh yeah, he's like a good guy, good teacher. And then I remember talking to the Anglican priest who was baptizing her, and I was like, did you talk to my sister about Jesus by any chance? I'm just trying to figure out like what was going on. And I was getting so frustrated. And I'm like, I don't know how to interpret what's happening here. But I remember sitting in a room and praying and just felt God say, just be gracious, just be loving. Just celebrate what she wants to celebrate with her and leave the details to me. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
It's so interesting because it feels like these are all kind of places where the lines feel so fuzzy. But you just kind of, yeah, you do have to be gracious with others and with yourself and just kind of like walk into it with your eyes open and just be like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And hopefully God will honor it. But I think like, so there are things that are like weird or difficult or strange in the intersections. And there are some things like you've all talked about, like some things that were confusing about like the traditions that you grew up with. But I think there are also things that exist in like evangelical Christianity, like traditions and stuff like that that exist in that culture that are also really weird. Actually, Vera, you didn't talk about what your background is.
So I grew up in a nominal Russian Orthodox home. So my parents both would say that they are Russian Orthodox believers. But we didn't go to church very often. When I was younger and we first came to Canada, we were going to church pretty regularly. But I think that was more just to like find community, get connected with other Russians in Toronto. But slowly we just stopped going. And it wasn't until I was a teenager where I was starting to explore my faith that we went back more regularly. I think most of my memories of faith growing up were the Lord's Prayer. So my mom would come and teach me the Lord's Prayer. And she would say it with me every night. And I would say it in Russian. And I had no idea what I was saying. I just memorized the like words and would repeat them. Mm-hmm. And now I understand. So that's nice. And it's a really cool overlap. But at the time, it was just like, just pray to God. Talk to him before you go to sleep and when you wake up and the rest of your day will be good. We also had a couple like icons in the house, and my mom had one in my room, like in the corner. And she would just kind of say, you can direct your prayers to the icon. It was really, really beautiful, really old image of Mary and Jesus. But again, I never really understood the purpose of it. When we went to the parish, it was really beautiful. There was icons everywhere. And the process is like you would buy some candles and then you would go to each icon and pray according to whatever need you had. So there would be an icon you go for healing or maybe for family stuff. If you're, I think those were the only two we went to. But there was also this part where you would pray for your dead relatives. And that was really important to my family. Every time we would go, we would always like put candles and pray for the people who had passed. And we would also get bread at the end of the service to take home that we could also like put in front of maybe the icons and candles and use for prayer. We would do confession, but it was a really public confession. It's like you kind of like line up and the priest is on the side and you're just like going up to him and he covers your head with his robe and then you whisper. And then, but it was important. Actually, my parents did mention fasting before confession, and my parents would always talk about this feeling of reverence in the church, like this connection to God. And it was really beautiful. You had music and I think liturgy or everything was sung for the whole service. So it was really beautiful spiritual experience. And you also, the important thing was to cover your head and to wear a skirt if you were a woman. It was like entering a different world. But I think my mom was more religious than my dad, or she had more faith. My dad he didn't really acknowledge the church or the church or his faith or God, but kind of later in life did more. My grandmother was also more open than my grandfather. And my grandfather was like a communist through and through. God does not exist. And even as I talked to him about Jesus, he always said, Vera, it's too late. It's too late for me. I've lived my life. I've made my decisions. And it would be disgraceful to ask for forgiveness now. So it's like, I always found that really interesting. So we talked a lot about the prodigal son and things like that. But yeah.
What an interesting response. It would be disgraceful. Who would it be disgraceful for? Like for him?
I think it was like it wasn't fair for him to receive forgiveness after he'd chosen away from God for so many years.
Yeah, I wondered if that's where it was going. That's so interesting. Are there things from the traditions that you grew up with, or like the values that you were taught or the beliefs that your parents held, that you actually do like bring into your expression of Christianity, or things that you want to keep and like contextualize, or things that maybe even things that just are a part of how you understand the world and understand God that may be different from people who are coming from like an evangelical Protestant background, that maybe they don't realize like this actually really shapes the way that you understand Jesus and interact with him.
I think for me, when I first became a Christian, I think I looked at the Orthodox Church as something that was completely irrelevant. You couldn't find Jesus through this like traditional religious system. And I remember going to a service with my dad and my sister, and I was making fun of some of the procedures a little bit, because I was like, I just don't understand the point in this. And my dad was getting a little frustrated with me, and he said, like, Vera, like you can't do that. Like, I experience God in this place. And that was kind of a little bit of a turning point for me. So I was like, oh, actually, God, you are here. And when I started thinking about that and looking at the service and realizing how reverent the church was, and how it really tried to create this holy place where people can come before God, I was like, oh, that's really amazing, actually. And I shouldn't discount my dad's experience of God in this place, just because for me it seemed a little bit strange, or it seemed different than the Christianity I was experiencing. So I guess to add on that, I really enjoy going to Orthodox services because it is more contemplative. It the posture is really reverent, and I think there's still a lot for me to learn from those things. Mm.
Are you going to a Catholic or Orthodox church right now?
No, I haven't for a while, but I would love to go.
I don't know if I would say like bringing things from the Buddhist faith, because it wasn't very outrightly taught to me of what you do within the faith culture. But I would say like the family culture was a big thing for me, of seeing, you know, right when a problem happens, like my grandma would go pray, or like dropping everything because her son is struggling. And I think I would take that into my Christian faith, of understanding, first of all, like it's like Jesus calls us to be the church in this world. So there's a sense of community and family and looking out for one another. That's really important. Like Christian faith is not just about yourself, but it is about all of the people around you, and Jesus saving all of us. So I think that is one important value I take into my own faith, just the importance of family and community and people around you because it matters that other people know Jesus as well.
Yeah, I would relate to that as well. And I think some of the what I take is just like, once I understood about Christianity and the various like traditions related to Christianity, like there was a way that I'd hold those as sacred. And so like I think that has like, and partly too, that also relates to my early church experiences. But I think when I experience like other churches or other experiences where they're a lot less reverent about like communion or things like that, like I get really upset. And so there is just that sense of like acknowledging like the sacredness of like what you're doing, and like acknowledging that you are doing it in a communal setting, and that like it's important like who you're doing it with and who you're with in that experience. The other thing that like it's not something I take into my like Christianity, but I think what I'm aware of is just like especially like when I encounter like some of my extended family, or even like when I was in Bangladesh in particular, I remember just there were a lot of things there that like its deep roots were in Hinduism, but like the actual meaning of what people were doing was lost on like, especially in Bangladesh, because it's like, you know, there was like the root of Hinduism, but like over the years, like the country became Muslim, and then like the people we were with were mostly Christian. And so like they were doing things that were like culturally and religiously significant to Hinduism, but like without any acknowledgement of like what that meant to the original like group of people. And so I think there was something about that that felt wrong to me. And so like in those experiences, like being mindful of like not carelessly doing something that is like religiously significant to a different faith. So I think that's something I'm just like mindful of when I'm in those spaces. And like, yeah, like I, like there was always this thing in my head of like, don't disgrace your Hindu father by like doing this thing. Like, even though the people around you don't care, this is actually like a big deal. And so, yeah, so I think that was something that like I'd come across in different settings. And even like with yoga, like there's a lot that's like very Hindu about yoga that people don't acknowledge. And like, yeah, there are certain spaces where I'd like talk to people that were Christian practitioners of yoga. I'm like, how do you relate to that part? Mm-hmm. And just the ways that people don't, or like try and dismiss it, or like my one Christian friend saying like, well, it doesn't mean anything to me, so it's fine if I do this. And I'm like, oh, like that feels like really hard. Yeah, and I think that's something like when I come across people that are in those different faiths, like trying to be respectful, but also like genuine in my devotion to Jesus. Mm-hmm.
That was part one of our two-part episode on staff coming from non-evangelical backgrounds. Come back on Thursday to hear the rest of our conversation with Vera, Archie, and Ashley.
And if you've been listening to any of the other podcasts, you'll know that we've announced a special edition podcast that's going to come out at some point, where we give staff the opportunity to get their name pronounced correctly if they often have a mispronounced name. We haven't gotten any submissions yet, so we're going to extend that deadline for all you keeners out there until the end of March. So if you have a name that is often mispronounced in InterVarsity circles, you can send an email to dstone@ivcf.ca with a 20-second clip of you pronouncing your name correctly, and we will put it in a special podcast to air later on this year. Thanks for joining us.
See you next time. Do 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 do